attempt to be brief, as it's my humble suspicion that perhaps we're here on the issues raised in Attorney General Love's brief and not my own. Mr. Quinteros was sentenced on a Class 3 felony in the Buffalo County District Court to a period of probation for 4 years. It's his position and the position we've raised before the court today that this sentence was excessive. I'm actually going to steal from Attorney General Love's brief when he cites State versus Rivera. He says that this trial court's sentence should not be based on irrelevant considerations. Essentially, Mr. Quinteros was subject to his first adult conviction in this case. The probationary sentence that was imposed not only allowed for the maximum incarceration allowed under a probationary sentence, although that was made incremental, it was almost for the maximum duration of a term of probation on a single count that exists in Nebraska. Additionally, in Buffalo County specifically, there are four sentencing orders, I believe. This one would be contained in the transcript, page 49. And if the court were to review that sentencing order, I would find that almost every checkbox is checked on Mr. Quinteros' sentence. In the brief that was submitted to the court, it was the position taken by the appellant that in addition to that, the statements made by the sentencing court during its handing down of the sentence indicated the opinion of the court was based on those irrelevant considerations as cited in State v. Rivera, not those as outlined, cited in our brief in State v. Timmons, those being the age, mentality, education, experience, social and cultural background, and his past criminal record, law, abiding conduct, motivation for the offense, nature of the offense, and the amount of violence.
So you're still making your excessive probation argument?
Well, as I indicated, I think that the reason that I get the opportunity
A lot of evidence out there with regard to the defendant that would indicate that maybe he should have been in prison instead of the actual probation because of his prior record. So what is incremental jail time?
As I understand it, incremental jail time is...
I tell you, I don't think it exists.
It's an imposition, at least locally, it's an imposition by our judges of time in jail that is left to the discretion of the probation officer.
Well, what statutory authority gives the court, the district court's authority to do that?
I would, although I can't speak directly for the court, Your Honor, I would argue that the incremental jail sentence is used as a motivational factor.
Well, we have a periodic jail. You either sentence somebody to jail time at probation or you don't.
I've seen all three during my time, I guess.
Is there authority for the state to, or for the probation office to impose what they call incremental jail time?
As the Attorney General's office argues in their brief, under the new sentencing order, which it's their argument that this would apply retroactively to that LB 605, that there is a license for an incremental jail sentence on misdemeanors under 292262.
Well, so the act at the time he was sentenced didn't provide for any jail time for probation for felonies, did it?
That would be that my reading also of 292262, yes.
And then 605 amended that, and that eliminated the jail time for felonies.
Incrementally, yes.
And then 1094, what did that do to the amendments of this probation and the jail time?
Well, I think that's the issue that that the Attorney General's office was hoping to resolve by the filing of its brief. Getting a determination from this court, I guess, of that
issue. I think
its
brief was filed before the effective date of 1094. Does the state's brief actually discuss 1094?
I don't recall it discussing 1094 directly, and I don't believe that I have addressed 1094.
Okay, well, I don't want to take you away from the rest of your argument, but maybe I'll ask these questions to the state.
Essentially, what I would conclude with is that it's hard in the Bill of Exceptions to demonstrate the tenor of the sentencing order. You get the cold language contained within the Bill of Exceptions. The forcefulness of his language was doubled, I guess, by the way it was delivered that day in court. If this had been presented as an opportunity to Mr. Canteris, I don't know that he would have had the same reaction. But based on the comments made about his family that the judge was familiar with from other unrelated matters to the one before the court, and the way in which his probationary sentence was described, I think that only added to the fact that he received consideration, I guess, from the court that he was an appropriate candidate for probation, but then in the same instant was handed essentially what could be seen as almost the maximum sentence under a probationary term. And I think that was Mr. Canteris' objection and the reason for the requested appeal.
Was 605 in effect when your client was sentenced, or 1094?
When he was sentenced, it was in effect. 605 was.
605 was.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
1094 was not. The act occurred approximately 9 months or prior to 605 going into effect. And actually, it's not contained within either of the briefs, but that was when the act was in fact charged. The actual date of occurrence was even before that. But
sentencing was during 605.
Was after 605, yes. 605 was in
after
August.
After 605, but before 1094.
Yes.
Okay.
Does the tenor of the delivery have any effect on the excessiveness of the sentence? I mean, a sentence is a sentence, no matter how it's delivered. It could be just read, it could be spoken, it could be handed to him. Does it matter on the tenor?
I think that the tenor called into question some of the things that were contained within the sentence itself, and it made the appearance that those irrelevant considerations that Rivera brings up were being considered by the court. The fact of the matter is, as the state's brief points out, other than the incremental jail sentence, the sentence that was imposed is well within the statutory guidelines. So what we are left with is to look at the actual imposition for this sentence to this criminal defendant. Was the sentence imposed to this criminal defendant excessive based on those factors that the court is supposed to consider? And so I would say that the tenor that with which the sentencing was imposed did add to the presumption, or at least the assumption, by the criminal defendant in this case, that the court was taking into consideration things that it shouldn't, and that the way that the sentence was imposed was directed towards those irrelevant considerations and not actually this defendant specifically and those factors that the court is supposed to consider.
Well, let me ask you one question. Do you contend that 605 is a controlling section, or is it 1094 that affects this particular action?
I would concur with the state's conclusion that 605 is the controlling, that 605 does not allow for incremental jail to be imposed in felony sentencings, and that 83-1135-022 makes 605 retroactive for the purposes of this sentencing.
But with the enactment of LB 1094, the legislature also added 83-1135.02 parent 3 that said that it was the legislature's intent that the changes made to 29-2262, among others, apply to all committed offenders under sentence, on parole, or on probation on or after the effective date of this act, and to all persons sentenced on or after such date. Doesn't that indicate the legislature's intent that 1094 will now be retroactive in its effect?
And while I'm not specifically familiar with 1094, your recitation of that part of 1094 does make it sound that that would be the case.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Love, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is George Love on behalf of the Appellee of the State of Nebraska. As the court pointed out, we submitted our brief at the end of March. At that particular time, 29-2262 did not have a provision for incremental jail time with respect to felonies. I think our analysis in our brief with respect to the application of 605 to this particular case is laid out in the case of State v. Thompson currently that the court decided in July after we submitted our brief.
Did Thompson, you may be better informed than I am by far, but didn't Thompson rely on the specific underlying
The issue in Thompson was the applicability of the specific DUI penalty vis-a-vis the general penalty of 605.
And the underlying criminal statute had some direct language
correct.
On sentencing.
But the court did analyze its approach to whether or not the specific governed over the general by looking at 605 and its retroactivity. So what I'm saying is I think we all agree that the sentence in this case, and even my colleague agrees, the sentence in this case is subject to 605 and the sentence of probation is retroactive. Now, the difference is this. After, again, brief and so on and so forth, the legislature, through Bill 1094, put back in a provision in 2262 for a 90-day penalty with respect to criminal case or incremental penalty. However, I don't think that that would apply in this case because at the time of the sentencing, there was no provision for jail time in this situation under 2262 for a felony. I think we're all agreed on that.
Yeah, I agree that that's what the statute said at that time, but I'm not sure I agree that 605 is the applicable provision in this case.
I couldn't hear the last
one. I'm not sure that 605 is the applicable statute that applies in this case and not 1094.
It is. 1094 does apply in terms of time, but the problem is ex post facto.
But his sentence is never final until the mandate issues, and he doesn't have a final sentence here. So at the time that the act occurred, he was subject to 180 days of jail time as part of probation for a felony. Then under 605, he had no jail time, could not be given any, but under 1094, he can be given 90 days.
You've left out Chapter 81 statute, which made sentences of probation that occurred after the effective date of LB 605 retroactive. So if it was retroactive, then that statute, Chapter 81, I believe it is, or 83?
83.
Thank you, 83. Made it retroactive.
The sentence has never been final under 605. It may be final under 1094. The problem is at the time he was sentenced, he was subject to 180 days. Now, if the law is later amended to allow for a lesser punishment, then we're required to enforce the lesser punishment. And clearly, 90 days is less than 180 days. So wouldn't he be eligible for 90 days of jail time under 1094?
No, because it would be ex post facto.
In fact, sentence has never been final, and he has never served any part of this punishment, and the punishment that would be affected at the time the crime was committed was 180 days, and now the punishment imposed is 90, so that's a lesser punishment. That's not ex post facto.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. If I may, I would like to just walk through the dates real fast. The date of the crime was December 23rd, 2014, prior to the effective date of LB 605.
And the punishment was...
The general proposition...
The punishment could be 180 days in jail.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Time of the incident.
Right.
Okay, that's correct. Now, LB 605 was in effect on August 30th. This gentleman was sentenced after that on November 12th. Chapter 81 makes any sentence of probation retroactive, okay, 2262, retroactive.
So they would be applying 605 at the time of sentence.
That's correct. Yes. But 1094 in the interim...
Also makes it retroactive.
Right. 1094 came along and changed that penalty that was applicable in November of no jail time to giving him jail time. So the sentence arguably is harsher by giving him the 90-day jails when he wasn't subject to it at the outset. So I think it's ex post facto.
1094 would be ex post facto as
to this particular case. That's exactly right.
This, because it's going to be more severe than the 605 applied retroactively.
That's right. And it's increasing the punishment. So that's my story. I know it's not in the brief, but there's been a lot of changes since I submitted the brief in March. And as far as the sentence of probation goes, we don't say that the sentence of probation imposed in this particular case isn't stringent, but it's still within statutory limits, and we would ask that you affirm. But I don't believe that the court should impose the jail time notwithstanding the statute. Because
as long as you've got some time, I want to ask you, 605 did not provide for incremental jails.
That's correct, under 292262.
For felons.
For felons, yes. Thank you, Your Honor.
But there is no such thing as incremental jail time. That's a term of art that isn't in the statute. There are periodic jail times that can be part of the sentence, and there are intermittent jail time that can be part of the sentence, but not incremental that's left up to the discretion of the probation office. In other words, you either get jail time or not on your probation.
Yes, I agree with
that. But this incremental was not a sentence that was left to the discretion of the probate court. The probation.
I think they're subject to jail time.
Yeah,
okay.
But it's not it has to be a set term. At the time
that's
he was
a hard sentenced. Argument to go against. That's a difficult argument.
Well, can I also couldn't the order simply say, I'm sentencing you to 60 days on, you know, December 1st unless waived by the court.
Yes.
That would be legal. But what Justice Wright's pointing out is you're delegating that duty to enforce a jail sentence to a probation officer. That's where I think the hang-up is.
I would agree with that 100%.
Okay.
I don't think you can delegate that authority to a probation officer. I think the probation officer could complain to the court that this gentleman isn't following certain conditions. We'd like him to sit and think
so
about it for a while.
So to summarize, your position is that at the time that he was sentenced, he could not have been given any jail time as part of the sentence for probation.
That's correct.
Okay. That's
by applying 605.
605 and 81, Chapter 81 statute. Because it made sentences of probation, regardless of 605, subject to itself. It was retroactive.
And to be clear, the sentence, putting aside 605 and 1094, the sentence of the probation order that said all service to be incremental only on the recommendation of probation and the order of the court, the state concedes that that was not an authorized
procedure. Yes, we do. I think Justice's idea that the sentence 60 days on December 1st unless waived, you know, through a report of the probation officer, something like that, yeah.
But is that really a delegation to the probation? Because we have the order of the court that's enforcing and making the commitment for the jail time. It's not the probation order. The probation officer that takes the person to jail on Friday and says, now serve 30 days.
The answer is I think it is improper, and the reason is it delegates judicial function to the probation officer. The court is the only one that can sentence people, not the probation officer. So he would be put in a position where he, arbitrary or rightfully, could put somebody in jail pursuant to that court order. And I
who could?
That's
who
right.
Could put him in jail? Mr. Love, who could put him in jail?
The probation officer.
Without an order of the court?
You think the jail's going to take him?
As Justice Wright points out, it's incremental on the view of the probation officer. So you're giving that probation officer the power to throw you in the jail without, I suppose you could go habeas corpus and get review and all of that, but the fact is unless you're violating a condition of probation and he wants to just simply provide an affidavit of probable cause, for your rearrest, that's something else. But if he has that power to sit there and say, okay, you're going to jail, no.
I think Justice Funk is suggesting that regardless of the amount that the probation officer thinks is suitable, it has to be so ordered. Is that?
That would be okay, too.
I think that's how probation order reads, doesn't it?
Well, it's the term of art, as Justice Wright points out, the incrementalness of it.
Incremental means you can serve it at various times,
that's right. But it's at the probation officer's
would be periodic sentencing, not incremental.
Right. But the way it reads is, my understanding is that the probation officer is the one to decide whether that imposition of that incremental time occurs.
I would agree. If they had the authority to take him to jail and the jail would accept him, that would be improper. But if they had to go to the court for an order or a commitment, then that's a different position.
I agree with that as well.
Thank you.
It's just
thank
that you. I don't think the authority should be vested in the probation officer completely. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
He has 45 seconds.
45 seconds, Mr. Bishop.
Counsel, I'm sorry to do this to you because I guess it's limited time, but what actually happens in your district? Does the probation officer decide these incremental times? So, for example, you violate it, so I'm going to give you a weekend in jail. Does the probation officer decide it in your district, or does it? They file a violation report, then the judge decides you should have a weekend in jail. Who decides that?
And Justice Kelch, I thank you for asking that question. I was actually going to come up here and try to come to the defense of my local judges here. I think that the incremental jail sentences are an evolution of us to get away from something that you had suggested, that being a what we would call a suspended jail sentence, where I think that what the argument that I'm hearing is that it would be proper for a judge to say, I'm going to impose 5 days, the first of every month while you're on probation.
Okay, but counsel, please, could you answer my question?
Yes.
As who makes that decision, the probation officer or the judge?
Although I couldn't speak for the judges in our jurisdiction, my understanding is that an alleged probation problem is noticed by the probation officer. A note to that effect is sent to the local judge. The judge reviews it and then either approves or disapproves the requested imposition of a sentence. So I think the suggestion of the duration of the incremental jail would come from the probation office based on what the violation is and their knowledge of the participant's performance on probation.
But the probation officer doesn't actually say you're going to jail.
I am not aware of that, although I would point out that in this sentencing order there is a provision for a 72-hour jail sentence for any positive or missed drug test for the probationer. And I don't know if that is also necessarily approved by the judge. I believe that it is. But that's, again, that evolution of getting away from a bunch of suspended jail sentences and putting it in the hands of the probation officer who deals with the probationer, and the fact that when there is a violation or something comes up, we're not constantly having to waive a suspended jail sentence, but that sentence is there at the discretion of the probation officer, but imposed by the judge. So the judge, it's my understanding that the judge always has the final authority of actually imposing the jail sentence. I'm not specifically aware of a time when a request has been made by the probation officer and it's been changed by the judge. So the probation officer requests 10 days and the judge changes it to 15 or changes it to 5. I think generally it's approved by the judge if it's made at the request of the probation office, but ultimately it does come down from the judge.
And now under 605 we have different standards and we have you can only serve 30 days and 30 days and things of that nature. So
yes.
It's a little bit different process at this point.
Yes.
Those are considered sanctions.
And I do think a majority of the problems that arose in this case that have been raised today are because of the short period of time from the imposition of 605 to the sentencing on November 12th in this case. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next case of the day is State versus Eric Benavides. Is it Ms. Hartner? Good morning to you. I want to note that the sign-in sheet indicates that I am recused, but I do not intend to recuse myself in this case. So unless someone objects, we may proceed, and you may proceed, Ms. Hartner.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is